Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 188. How do I live without you?
Beautiful.
I am
Why does that sound so good? What the hell?
That was so good.
Thank you. I am May, and I am here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
We are the Ladies with Gumption. Recap DCTV in a flash. You can always reach us on Twitter at DCTVGumption, over on the emails at ladieswgumption@gmail.com, on Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. You can also find all our podcasts at Apple Podcasts, /iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and anywhere else you may listen to podcasts. Google Play has like 17 plays, which is very low.
That's so amazing.
Google Play.
It's okay. At y'all all. Just don't have Google. Y'all don't like Google Play. It's okay.
We do have a Patreon. If you would like to support us, and that is $10 a month. You get to listen to us talk about everything, including MCU stuff. We did WandaVision, we did Loki, we did recently we did Spider-Man No Way Home, we've done Netflix series, we've done Bridgerton, we've done Witcher, we've done other Netflix series. I think
there's Batman, which is a movie, DC movie, but also Disney stuff like Encanto and Turning Red.
Mm-hmm.
And next week we will be doing Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
Yes.
Superior multiverse show.
I was about to say, should we have a multiverse showdown? Like Everything Everywhere All at Once versus Doctor Strange?
You know what? I had like a friend that was like, yeah, I'm going to go see Everything Everywhere All at Once and then Multiverse of Madness back to back. I'm like, you really
want to
do that?
Well, the first one is superior to the second one, so I don't know. Marvel watch like should maybe hang up the cape and let the Daniels do their thing. Other than that, we can find other things like Doom Patrol and everything else on patreon.com/DCTVGumption. Over in the news area, we have Rick Gordian, who wrote the Percy Jackson book.
Not DCTV, but like adjacent. Can be. We can draw the lines. We can connect dots.
We can, and we'll probably cover it because, you know, I don't know if you are big book fans, but like I remember reading the books very good, and I hope that the show will be superior to the movies, but the show has switched things up. In terms of casting Leah Jeffries, who is a 12-year-old black girl who is now playing Annabeth Chase. And, of course, all the racists came out to show their racism.
And bullying a 12-year-old.
Bullying a 12-year-old, super nasty to her.
They got her banned off of TikTok or something.
It was pretty horrible. Like, she has not even shot a single scene of the show, and they're already being the worst. And so Rick Wardian went to social media and was basically like, y'all are harassing this child because of the color of her skin. And this is racism, friends. It is racism.
Yes. Thinking, I know who the character is supposed to be because I wrote the freaking character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
If I'm okay with this, like, you guys should be too. It's not an issue. It should not be an issue. So I'm glad that he spoke out because everybody else has been pretty silent. Or in general, it feels like producers and anyone who's, you know, with any of these shows and casting such as this, this is how they should speak out against that.
Right.
So,
and also his wife also spoke out too on Twitter about it as well. So, but it is like, you know, I feel like, because a lot of people were, you know, talking about how it's been the same ever since like Candace got casted as Iris on The Flash and basically kickstarted a whole new wave of black women being given these front role opportunities that have either historically been white in other mediums or just people don't like them because they're black and they're a female lead. It's good that we have, you know, I feel like the defense squad comes in earlier and earlier every time these ladies get cast because we already know what the blueprint is. But I also feel like, you know, Candace took on this burden or this mantle so that the next person would not have to have it as bad as she did.
Right.
And yet it still seems to be such as happened. And this is a 12-year-old. Like, you know, like a lot of the other ladies that have come in, of course, they've also had to deal with things that they've had to. But they're also, you know, adults with credits under their names too. It's not like excuses, like, you know, everybody, no matter how old you are, how established you are, you can still feel, have your mental health affected by people being assholes and being racist to you. And but, you know, I think the fact that she's a minor as well, I feel like by now, shouldn't we have more safeguards in place? And I think that's a one of the good things about Rick Riordan, the creator of the series, and his wife. Like, these are, if no one else is going to speak out, like, these are the people that need to put the hammer down, and then that's it. That's the thing. And so I'm really glad that they did not do what The Flash did, and they did not tell, you know, Leah to hide, and that they were not going to say anything. They came out strong. So I thought that was good for her. I'm glad they're protecting her like that.
Agreed.
Yeah, as they should. In sad news over on the CW side of things, we have a lot of cancellations. Everyone's on the chopping block. We've got Naomi was canceled after season one, like a day, 2 days after its season one finale, which is now a series one finale, even though they are trying to shop the series around to streamers, but at the CW, it's over for Naomi. Mm. So that's really sad. It joins Batwoman and Legends and being canceled. And then same day, like maybe a couple hours later, CW is like, we've greenlit Gotham Knights. So that's getting a series order over at the CW, including the Supernatural prequel and the Walker
Independence.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So A lot of cancellations over at the CW. Basically, like, half their stuff is gone now. Legacies is also gone. So
Dynasty, Charmed, Roswell.
Mm-hmm, everything. It's, like, really bad.
Legacies was surprising, actually. I wonder, like, low-key, I wonder if they're just like, we need to cut ties with Julie Black. Everything she has touched has got to go.
Yeah, but it hasn't been as bad in a long time. Even CBS has been canceling, like, today, five shows at least. So the sale is looming, and I don't know what the CW is going to look like in the future, because it won't look like it does now for sure.
It's looking pretty white right now.
Indeed. But now, speaking of Naomi, we will talk for the last time about the show in terms of, like, episodes. Very sad, but to take us away, we have lovely Jessica to talk about Naomi and The Flash.
So I didn't really have time this week to do side titles, so I just kind of made some up. But side A, we have Naomi. It's a homecoming and a backstabbing. This was a 2-hour season finale. So in the first episode, after having visions of her brief time on Earth 29 as a baby, so we go all the way back to the beginning, like Kara escaping kryptonite style. There's, like, danger everywhere. Naomi sees these memories, and she seeks out the advice of her council of parents, Deez and Badu, Greg, Jen, and now Akira. But no one really can really agree on a plan. Half of them want to leave. The other half are like, well, you know, she is strong. She can handle it. But eventually they all kind of, you know, agree on the fact that we need to get Naomi out of here. And it's not running away, it's just like running, it's like a defense plan. So we're going into defensive mode. And Naomi does not really agree with this. She's like, okay, y'all were training me and you wanted me to be the hope, and now I want to fight. And y'all are like, no. She's like, what? I don't get it. So she feels kind of sidelined in the decisions about her future. So she makes up her own plan after talking with Akira. Akira gives her a locket from her parents. And this locket, when she touches it, she has a psionic vision of a field of flowers. And so she sets off on a road trip with Annabelle in search of the specific place from her new vision. But there is somebody creepy with red eye guy that is tracking them closely. So every time they are going somewhere, she gets a vision of this creepy guy that is following them, and then they have to run again. Meanwhile, Anthony heard that Naomi and Nathan broke up, and he's like, I might have a chance here, guys. So he starts to get in with Naomi the only way that he knows how, by resurrecting Superman. So we're getting a lot of flashbacks from the pilot episode. Anthony, who knows nothing of comics or Superman, wants to do a retrospective of the Superman incident that happened 3 months ago. But what he thought he was going to, you know, see a very excited and engaged Naomi, she's very withdrawn and does not want anything to do with Superman or drawing attention to aliens. And Anthony finds this odd. So he goes to Lourdes and he's like, isn't this odd? And she's like, yeah, that is kind of odd. And so they team up and go back through all the times that Naomi has been acting weird and start to put the pieces together for themselves. They start going to by going to Dee, who is not very helpful. And I feel like he almost had them off the scent, but then Zimbada came in, like, even creepier than he was. He was like, leave now. We are not being suspicious at all. Go away. but so they get delayed at that time. But when they go into the forest, they find Naomi's birthstone. And then they're almost attacked. And then they are saved by Dee and Zimbada. So now they know that Dee and Zimbada are aliens. And most likely that Naomi is, too. So they have figured out the truth by super sleuthing on their own. So that was the gist. Oh, well, that's not the whole thing. Naomi and Annabelle are in the field of flowers and they are attacked, but she defeats the guy quite easily when he figures out that she is impenetrable. His weapons won't penetrate her, so he like leaves. And then she finds a door, opens the door, and goes through it and gets a very blurry message from her parents to be careful and not trust everyone because there is someone in your table, Jesus, that is going to betray you. So she's left with that nugget. And then we go into the second hour. Naomi has to make a decision to protect those that she loves the most because she decides that she and her parents are going to leave town. They decide to leave and not tell anybody. But they are in a car accident when Brutus's lackeys, you know, crash the car and kidnap her parents. And she starts to realize when she goes back to Annabelle and they go to visit Dee, Dee's not there. None of the parents are around. Annabelle is also high-key mad that she was going to leave, not say anything. But they gather, now that they know that the Brutus's people are gathering people that are close to Naomi because she can't be hurt, but they can. They go and they round up the rest of the Scooby Gang and they gather at Dee's and Naomi's like, I have to save my parents on my own. And they're like, I don't think so. So they all come up with a plan to help Naomi free her parents, all five of them. and while once the parents are free, Naomi is like, you know what? I know it's a trap. I know they want me to go, and I'm just going to go. And Animal is like, why would you leave me like this? And she's like, you know, I have to do it. And so she goes through another portal. We finally meet Brutus, and they have a weird random conversation about, you know, who's there to help who. We figure out that Brutus isn't even from Earth 29. He's a colonizer. And he tries to hurt Naomi, but Naomi makes the flowers bloom, which he didn't think that she could do. And now he's scared. And then Zimbada and Akira save Naomi, and Akira sacrifices herself by staying on the other side of the portal so she can close it. And then at the final minutes, you know, everything's back together. Nathan and Naomi are good again. Everyone's feeling relieved a little bit. And Naomi and her parents are going to bury the ship that she came in, and when she touches the ship, she has one last memory, and that memory is that lo and behold, Judas is in the form of Greg and Jen. They killed her parents and kidnapped this child and expect us to love them. I don't know, but Naomi's not having it. I'm not having it, and she ends the season or the series, I guess, being like, she flies away and says, like, I don't want anything to do with you. Do not follow me. Do not talk to me. Whatever. And I guess Dee is going off to find Koala, his one true love. So we got that as well. So that is what happened. The penultimate episode was directed by Carl Seaton and written by Jill Blankenship. And the finale episode was directed by Demaine Davis and written by Ava DuVernay and Jill Blankenship. What sparked joy?
Well, I feel sad. It's such a shame that it took Naomi like this long to get to like this level of like action, plot movement, reveals, character turns, because like that's what I feel like it should have been the whole time, and now there is no more. So like I guess it sparked joy in the moments that I was watching the episodes, and I was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, it ended, and I was like, well, season two will be interesting, and now it will not be, unless someone else picks it up. So that is deeply unfortunate. But I did enjoy how they had, like, they incorporated Naomi's memories and how she's, like, piecing things together just as the audience is in order to build up to the reveal that it was actually her parents that killed her parents. And then to contrast that with the very beginning of the episode of part two where she's telling her parents about the fact that there is, a Judas among them, and they know that they are the Judas, so their reactions like, are, oh yeah, exactly, yeah, you're like, ah, I can't, I'm surprised.
Like, oh my god, wow.
So, like, it's fun to, like, see that comparison, and then just, like, sit there and be like, when were they being sincere, when were they not, how, just how bad are they, so yeah, so all of that is really, was really interesting. Also love that we did get, like, the Scooby gang, or whatever you want to call them, the Naomi squad, all together again in these episodes, given that we didn't ever really get to delve into any dynamic truly outside of Annabelle and Naomi, it's good that we got all of them, so that we can just, you know, it's all just one happy unit. That's good. But that being said, Annabelle has stayed the best of friends throughout. Definitely, like, MVP for supporting cast member for this show. So, yeah, other than that, really happy. I actually really liked the Akira and Naomi scenes. It was really nice to see, like, this other side of Akira with her and to hear her talk about Naomi's previous parents. I'm really excited for D. I hope that he meets his, I'm just going to call her McGann, because I'm like, this, he's basically John, and she's this lady's basically McGann in my mind. But anyway, so I hope that, you know, they live happily ever after, even if we don't get to see that. What else? Overall, I thought there was, like, really strong episodes, and it was made for a great cliffhanger had we known that there would be a season two, or if it had been, like, a mid-season cliffhanger, it also would have been a great mid-season cliffhanger. So, you know, unfortunately, that did not turn out that way.
Yes, indeed. I love the cliffhanger so much. I feel like I had many emotions watching. I was like, Greg and Jen, I feel so betrayed. But also it makes them much more interesting than they've ever been in the entire series so far, because it gave them a lot of agency and intrigue, like, you know, the whole tear and their involvement with it and them being scientists and like, we do need to save the planet and why we stole this child because no one would listen. So like the desperation there, even though we don't like, you know, parts of that, but I would like to have learned more about that if we had gotten season two. But it does just make them
so good that they're gonna cast a white woman with that one. Like, that would have been like, oh my god.
Yeah, for sure. But it makes them much more like just intriguing people. And now I really want to learn more, and I'm so upset that we won't really get that chance anymore. But in general, I really did love even like Lourdes and Anthony trying to investigate what's going on with Naomi and how this connected to the Superman sighting and why she changed that moment and what's going on with Dee, who's not playing it cool at all. So that was fun, and then they do end up learning, like, Naomi's secret, and they all kind of get together and help save the Council of Parents, and just, you know, it's nice that, like, she can finally be free of trying to hide her secret. I think this is, like, the fastest anybody in the whole cast now, like, knows who Naomi is or what she can do. So that was great, and I don't feel like it really felt forced in any way. just the council of parents in general, because like them sitting around arguing about what they should do with Naomi and agreeing for the first time in the entire season about the fact that she should hide away for a while was really just fun. You see like all these different perspectives of where they're coming from, and also the uniting factor that they want to all protect Naomi in some kind of way was really great. Brutus and Naomi, just there, most of that will be in like the dislike section, but I did like the fact that it felt very, for the brief moment we had it, it did feel like very President Snow Katniss, in the sense that he's like, they, you know, you've been lied to the whole time, I'm going to tell you the truth, blah, blah, blah. So that was good too. What else? Just like Naomi finally deciding to, you know, choose her own destiny and take charge of her own situation, because, you know, like she said, for the whole season, everyone's been telling her what to do, what the best course of action is. You know, you should hide, you should do this, you should do that. And she's like, no, I'm finally going to do something of my own choice. And I'm going to go to Earth 29 and deal with Brutus on my, you know, on my own, because I want to protect my family and friends. So that was really a good moment for her, in the sense that it gave her a lot of agency. And she finally was able to discover a lot of truth and face, you know, her fears and coming into her own powers, in the sense that like she got psionic powers, she got the power of flight at the end, she was able to do all of these things because she was finally at a place where, like, you know, it was like, it is time for you to rise. And I feel like that these two episodes really represented that in a really great way. Learning what, or like who Naomi is to Earth 29, in the sense that like what it is, what they wanted her to do for the planet and like saving it, I was like, this makes so much sense. And I wish we'd gotten that much earlier.
She's Captain Planet.
But that reveal was great in general, because it was a big one. Usually like when they reveal certain mysteries, it's like, oh, well, that was kind of underwhelming. But this one was like, wow, you can actually fix the planet. And that's a big deal. So I really liked that reveal and how it played out. Even like seeing her grow the flowers and the trees and stuff was really great.
I like that there is all of the return to the beginning kind of moments in there, because we had, you know, a lot of the stuff that was in the first episode, we didn't really get back to until this finale set of episodes. So you have like the return of Superman and Naomi's blog, and how that kind of connects, how Superman's journey for her has connected to her own superhero journey, even like the similarities like of how she left her Krypton was similar to how, like, you know, Kara's parents put her in the ship, pod ship, to send her to Earth and save her while their planet was getting destroyed. So I feel like there was a lot of like similarities there. I like that, you know, we got the return of Scooby Gang in the finale. I did not like Anthony's and Lourdes' fantastic adventure in the penultimate, because I was being petty about them like figuring it out on their own. But that being said, it really did feel nice to have all six of them working together. And it I guess also because now they all know the secret, it did feel like everybody was kind of working on the same page. I like that they called themselves like Power Rangers, and Jacob gave everybody like their own code names. Love that Nathan is Ted Lasso. I feel like that's appropriate. And Annabelle's Doge Cat. So I really liked how they all worked together to support Naomi. They feel more like a friend group, because they started out with like half of them are fighting over Naomi, and now, you know, they're all friends. Even without Naomi there, they've connected, made these bonds together. So I thought that was nice. I liked just the love story of Annabelle and Naomi's friendship over the entire season, how that kind of like culminated in this finale with them going on the road trip together. And, you know, again, there's that kind of thing of Naomi feeling like she has to leave her friends or let them go to protect them. And Annabelle being like, this is scary, but I'm choosing to be here with you. I'm not going to leave you. And then I felt like the goodbye when she goes through the portal and they don't know what's on the other side or if Annabelle's going to see her again, that kind of like heartbreak I thought was really well done. I think both of those girls have like really great chemistry and I think they work really well together. I love that overall Annabelle has, it's just like a walking Netflix pop culture encyclopedia of all of like her, you know, movies and stuff that she kind of throws out. So, and she always has like the best analogy. She had another analogy, you know, like because Naomi was feeling bad about not feeling, or she's feeling insecure about not being ready. And, you know, Superman doesn't have these problems. And, you know, Annabelle was like, how do you know Superman doesn't have those problems? Maybe his comics are like Insta.
You only see the good stuff.
Yeah, so I was like, yeah, like she just makes like the best comparisons about stuff. So I thought that was good. It's great to have a friend like Annabelle help you see perspective of different things. I liked the also the grouping, like you have a Scooby game for the kids, and you also have the parents council with Zumbadu D and Akira, and with, along with Greg and Jin trying to decide what to do. I thought it was very interesting, the scene where they're all like, it felt like, you know, the scene from The Office where everyone has like guns, finger guns pointing at each other, like trying to accuse each other of, you're gonna betray Naomi, no, you're gonna betray Naomi. And I thought that was, and then their kind of like mild annoyance at being saved by teenagers was hilarious. I think the ending surprise of Greg and Jin being lying liars that lie was very shocking because, you know, you had that one surprise of them being alien, and that was just like a huge shock and felt like a betrayal to us and to Naomi. And then you have the second one that is an even bigger betrayal than the first one, seemingly. So I felt like the way that they ended it with her like flying off, I feel like it sets up a really good season two, because, you know, Dee is gone to search for Koala. Maybe we'll see it, maybe we don't. But he's gone and her parents are liars. So that would set up like maybe a Zumbadu Akira pairing in season two. She's been to Earth 29 now, so now we get to see Earth 29. Maybe we go there. There's the Lord of the Rings style journey that she has to go on to collect all the other members of the 29. So there's a lot of like interesting things that I think that they set up really nicely that would have kicked off a good season two, and hopefully they still get to do it. So that was a lot of good stuff there. What did not spark joy?
I think for me, the main thing, like, even though I totally agree that it's like a fun and great twist that sets up great season two that we will not get, I do think that it just adds to how inconsistent Greg and Jen's characterization has been all season. Like, I just don't believe that when the show started, they had this end goal in mind for those characters. And I feel like it could have been set up in a much different way. Like, we could have gotten the building tension, even if we learned, like, maybe not exactly what they did, but if we had learned they were aliens before Naomi learned, etc., whatever, it would have been much more interesting to set up in different ways to then still have the impact of this reveal, but also have them feel like real people and not just like plot devices who pop up and do what needs to be required in that moment. I also think that, you know, clearly that CW doesn't have any money and, you know, they had to, like, give everything away for free or whatever to end everything. But I do think that given, like, how, like, cool it is to see the planet, to see, like, the rebuild and Naomi's powers finally coming into, like, finally blossoming, the effects, you know, could stand to be better. So, but I guess everything now is, like, it's like this. It's just like this now in the CW, and that's why they all had to go, except for apparently Gotham Knights has to show up for some reason. So yeah, I feel like the CW clearly just could not afford the kind of shows that it is greenlighting nowadays, which is unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, overall, I think that just, like, given that like, the show is over now, there are so many promising characters and fun dynamics that we never really got to fully explore because they spent so much time as a group going over the, like, kind of same few mysteries that they could have paced a lot faster. So that's not a problem with these episodes because they finally did it. It's just that these episodes are a show highlighting what they could have been doing that they just did not do before now. So that is too bad. I also just like, I don't understand because maybe I'm just like, did not understand what was going on. I also watched part two before I watched part one because I didn't realize it was a two-parter. So I was so fucking, I was so confused while I was watching part two and then I had to go back and watch part one and be like, oh, okay. So I was like, how much did Zumbaru know about Naomi's parents and what they did? And Akira.
He did know much.
Because it seemed like he was like, well, you don't, they don't know the whole truth or whatever. Like, it's just that they're aliens. Like, the way that they always set it up so that they are, like, mad at each other. So then it's like, maybe he does know. But then obviously he can't because who would, it was like Child Protective Services of the aliens should have taken Naomi away from his parents. So I was like, I feel like, how did y'all not know? Like, so that's, I just thought that was like weird. Like, I was like, how did they just get away with it? And then now Naomi's like, well, I remember now. Okay. So I don't know. I don't know. I just want to know. I just want to know what's going to happen. Cause I feel like there's no way that they would then just like be like, okay, Greg and Jen are the villains. And so now we have to get rid of them. You know, there had to be like yet another explanation that allow them to stay on the show. So it's just very convoluted. I just feel like a Russian doll. Russian doll of plots that are popping out of Greg and Jen. So anyway, moral of the story is that they are terrible and they should have been written better and everything else in the show is better than them. Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And we've said this before in previous podcasts, but like it has been really inconsistent because it's like I don't really know who they are as a viewer. You know, they started off being this super loving parents who only want the best for Naomi. They got along really great. I think the journey towards her trusting them less was good, like from the fact that she was just like seeing this perfect daughter, this perfect family, nothing was wrong. They communicated all the time. And then just suddenly being like, I can't trust you with anything anymore. That was good. Them as people, not so much. I feel like they definitely didn't have a plan for that. Otherwise, we would have seen little tidbits here and there. Sort of reminds me of like how, like in The Flash season one, they revealed who Harrison Wells was to the audience by like the mid-season finale. And so you're like, oh, gasp. And then Barry's like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And I feel like that should have been the case here as well. And even like the finale, if the show was a full season order of like 22 episodes, this would have felt more, this could have been more like a mid-season cliffhanger, you know, or which we could have had like up to episode 9, could have sped up the pacing a little bit to reveal certain things throughout rather than leaving everything until the end, even like the big showdown with Brutus, which lasted like 30 seconds.
Which I totally forgot to put in my dislike, so focus on Greg and Jen, but yeah, I thought that with all that buildup, like, come on now.
Yeah, I was like, this is the guy that has been like hunting you for a long time, and we got that he wasn't even from Earth 29. I was like, so what's your deal, man? I don't know.
Yeah, like, do you just like destroy planets or, you know?
Yeah, so I feel like they could have been longer, and if we had spent less time kind of sending his henchmen to come after Naomi and we got more Brutus himself, that would have been more interesting because they could have done that. It's not like Earth 29 is vastly different.
You didn't need that many assassins. Like,
yeah. So it's just like just general pacing and stuff where it felt like everything was kind of crammed into this. And it was very exciting. But at the same time, other episodes could have been more exciting because we didn't have to have all the stuff in one episode. So I feel like there could have been moments where even like the emotional payoff of learning Jen and Greg were, you know, who they were and what they did, could have had like a longer moment to really absorb what what the reveal was to begin with. And I don't really feel like we got that. So like while the cliffhanger was great, the show in general could have like amped up the superhero weep aspects of the show rather than making it all about like one mystery and Naomi being in the dark the whole time.
Yeah, and I don't even think they explain like after the second bomb, what their position was still. Like, I don't know. Like, are you working for Brutus? That's clearly not the case. So, like, you stole her to do what exactly? But then you don't want her to do that because you're fighting with Zumbaru who wants her to save the planet, but you don't seem to want that either. So, like, I just don't really know. You killed two people for a baby for what? Like, it just makes him seem just, like, very unredeemable, you know? So, as shocking as it was, I still don't know what the motive was for them to do that. And I definitely agree that I don't think that the writers knew either what the motive was to do that. And I was like, I was thinking, like, I don't know if this is how her parent plot goes in the comics or whatever, but they just throw Greg and Jen like under the bus, ran it over, you know, a couple times to make this plot work, because they just seem like the worst people ever. And that's even, it's even like more sinister that you've been acting like these loving parents, raising her, one, not telling her that she has powers, that she's an alien, but two, that you're raising her knowing that you killed her parents and you have all this smoke for Zimbadu. But you're the villain. So that was, I don't know what they're trying to do with Greg and Jen, but that was, it was a good like bomb, because I was just like, the betrayal. But other than that, like, it just like for the show, it doesn't make sense. I was annoyed at Anthony and Lourdes teaming up. I must admit, I was annoyed, because I was like, she didn't want to tell you. Obviously, you weren't supposed to know. Like, I have my four, and I'm okay. So why are you doing, like, it was annoying me that they were, like, putting pieces together accurately. I was like, please stop.
You are too curious for your own good. Please, go ahead.
Yes, home. Like, stop it. But I did like it, actually, when they were all together and in the know. So it worked out. I was just very annoyed. Watching the buildup of them finding out without like circumventing Naomi to find out. I think that, you know, Suarez said a couple times in his feedback that the show does feel a little high school. And I feel like that this finale fight felt a little bit high school. It low-key, like when Brutus was talking to Naomi, was like, you don't know the whole truth, you don't know what's going on, and he wanted her to join him. And I was thinking, it reminded me of Invincible when Omni-Man was like putting Mark's face through like the entire subway system, like, look what you do. But it didn't, you know, he one kind of hit and then he's like scared, and it, like the first field with the guy, he's been stalking them the whole time, this big adult man stalking these two girls, and one hit and she doesn't, you know, it, her, his weapons bounce off, he's like, oh my god, this is too much for me, I'm gonna go. I'm like, what? That's it? Like, why did you even bother going, dude? Like, I don't understand. So there wasn't a lot of, I feel like there's only so much she can do, because she's like a teenager. I feel like the threats should match a teenager level, maybe. I don't know. Instead of like grown adults.
Right.
Yeah. But who knows? Anywho, I think Sward had thoughts on the finale. Would you like to please me?
Yes. He says, holy shit, Naomi, all caps. That ending was incredibly well done. It all makes sense why her parents were so suspicious this whole time. The drama we've been craving from this show is right there in plain sight. Were they the ones who betrayed her to Brutus during the episode? Were they behind anything else this season? The questions multiply, and we need those answers in season two, which we will not get to our own. To be honest, I was mostly bored during the finale up until this point. I did love Naomi and Annabelle's conversations, though. But still, I found the inclusion of all these characters rather worrisome, honestly. I really hope we don't have another Team Flash syndrome on our hands in the future, and that Naomi will continue to shine in more seasons. Sad that that would not happen. But the finale was worth it for that moment at the end. Casey Walfall's acting was incredible, and I hope we see more of this fallout and a new adventure for Naomi in season two.
Aww.
Sad. Tears.
Well, there's nothing to predict.
Well, do we think that someone could pick it up? Do we think that a streamer might?
Who would take it, though? Like, where do you think it would fit?
That is a great question. I mean, I guess
it fits on HBO Max, to be honest.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, HBO Max would be like the next one, but I don't know if they would want it, just based on the kinds of stuff that they put out. But maybe they'll start doing more, you know, like, apparently, they're going to make a K-drama. So if they're going to make a K-drama, then they should make Naomi season two.
Yeah. I don't know that they'll skew younger viewing, but if I feel like if this was a CW specific...
We can't even say Netflix, because Netflix was, right.
If this was a CW specific cancellation, like CW was one of those networks where like, yeah, we don't want you anymore, kick you out, then I could see another place taken. But I feel like it's hard now because like...
Freeform?
Freeform, yeah. And that would be Disney, though. I don't know if they would...
Yeah, that's true.
...do that. And that's the issue with streamers, because they're all owned by, you know, now bigger corporations. So it's like, where do you go if you are canceled? It used to be Netflix. And now Netflix is canceling all their shit, too. So it's not, like, a safe place anymore, either. So... I don't know. I feel like HBO Max, if it wasn't like, if things weren't happening in the WB, then maybe HBO Max could be a place, you know? But I don't know anymore.
Well, hopefully get some kind of news. Maybe there'll be hope for it yet. But moving on to a show that will not die. Even though one of its main characters just did. We have The Flash, Memories of the Offender. Team Flash uses the distraction of the bank robbing meta to detract from the grief of losing someone they love, except they don't really do this at all, because when the bank robbing meta calls them pathetic and disappears, they can't really track him. So they take Joe's watercolor memorial advice and use that time to take a grievance period in which they do a lot of made up shit that we've been told that Frost likes to do, because none of them actually really knew her well enough to know what else to do. Told through vignettes, we start with Iris, who, and by the way, when I was watching this, like, my stream was, like, horrible, and I just did not have the energy to rewatch this, so this is going off of what I saw and pieced together throughout this episode. But told through vignettes, we start with Iris, who tries to delegate Frost's obituary to someone else on her team to avoid being fake in an article about someone she wasn't close to. Meeting with Carla, who in that one scene feels like she's had more of a relationship with Iris than either... with Iris than either Frost and Caitlin has, gives Iris the idea to let people who actually like Frost talk about her on her podcast and get the word out that way. So she does, and she invites...
like Frost.
I mean, it's true. Like
it's true though. and the next vignette, you have Chester and Allegra. In the next vignette, Chester and Allegra, while arguing over the perfect tribute for Frost and whether hummus is a condiment.
It is not. That was offensive to me personally.
It's just like, why would you do that to a sandwich? They run into the only person who actually feels like he's grieving, who is Mark, at bar. And Mark is upset because he never got to tell Frost how he felt, which, like... what were y'all doing all that time, Mark? Like, y'all were jumping out of planes and not really talking to each other, or, you know, that he doesn't know, that he never really got a chance to know Frost or how, tell her how he felt when they spent all that time together, but whatever. But his display of pain is enough for Chester and Allegra to realize that their argument is petty and come up with the bright idea of just picking out a jacket and putting on a hook in the little hero for him and calling it a day. Barry is zipping around the world doing things on Frost's bucket list instead of spending time with his wife. So that's that. And then finally, you have Caitlin, who has attitude with everybody when she gets to work and her teammates are meeting without her. So she goes and firmly plants herself in the denial and anger stages of grief, refusing to budge or leave her apartment. Even when Barry tries to coax her to go into Frost's funeral, if you get this long, drawn-out conversation with basically Caitlin just yelling at Barry or, you know, sharing all of her negative feelings about Barry that no one's going to complain about. Finally, she's convinced to go to the funeral with a "what would Frost want you to do?" So she goes. Wes Allen, mainly Iris, shows up to the funeral looking spectacular. The grief is released. Everyone is ready to get back to work. To apprehend the bank robber who is still out bank robbing. CCC has missed Iris tremendously because Allegra doesn't do shit at the job, but they're about to miss her again because her time sickness decides to kick in and she disappears. And Caitlin has now moved on to the bargaining stage of grief, where, with Mark's help, she will attempt to resurrect a dead person because we, the audience, have not suffered enough yet. Vanessa Parise directed the episode, written by Jonathan Butler and Gabriel Garza, teleplay by Jeff Hirsch. What sparked joy?
Well, I feel like the structure of the episode was well done. Like, if I cared about Frost and if these were things that actually had been acknowledged or revealed about Frost previous to this episode, then this would be good. Like, I was like, yeah, it's nice to see everyone's grieving her in their own way. Everyone's getting taking steps to move forward and having to deal with, you know, the potential hole that she will have left them with. So, yeah, overall, the writing within the episode was pretty decent for Frost as the character imagined by the person who wrote this episode within the confines of its hour. So, good job. I can't remember who you are, but you tried. I do like that, like, I like how Chester and Allegra's dynamic has evolved to the point that you can believe them having this petty squabble that is, like, covering up their actual feelings, and then them being able to acknowledge that and, like, reorganize and come together for, like, a happier ending by the end of the episode. Like, they're a little friendship that is going to be more sometime in the near future is working out nicely for me. I support them. I thought the Eddie scenes, like the scenes of Iris and Sue having to interact with Eddie were great. Like, they were, like, really creepy. Rick Cosnett is much better at being.
Wait, what are you talking about? Last week's episode.
Was that the last episode? Yeah. Why? Because I watched both episodes at once. That's why. Never mind. Because I didn't watch it last week. So that was what I had to say last week. But anyway, back to this week. Iris getting to do her podcast. Great. Love that. Iris getting, you know, to be at the head of CCC media. Also nice. Taylor, fucking Taylor. Ugh, I hate her. But her being like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're back. Exactly. I agree, Taylor.
I like the little Karen.
Well, nice for you. But anyway, you know what? Actually, I agree with her too. Like, let's get rid of the rest of these. These new members, I don't trust them. Let's go. But anyway, so it's nice to see Iris, you know, the head of this, like, leading the podcast, having that, like, nice soothing voice and, like, the way that she's steering the conversation. All that was good. I actually did think that Carla was, like, the most interesting that she has been ever. So that scene with Iris was also really interesting. The Caitlin's speech at the funeral was good. And then it, you know, the scenes went on. But if that had been how we had ended it, that would have been good. I also did like her calling Barry out on, like, this idea that he's just doing that for him. Like, he's only reaching out to her for himself or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, you know, that's true. But so yeah, overall, it was an interesting concept that I think was done well enough. But many problems happen outside of that.
That was much nicer than how I was going to say.
Well, that's because I thought the Eddie part was part of the episode. That's
And those scenes were very good. So
they were so good. Anyway.
This is not my dislike section, so I'm going to have a hard time. But I did, like, I appreciated that we got a lot more Iris than I thought we were going to get in an episode about Frost's funeral. Kind of her being back at CCC Media and doing her podcast was really great, which we haven't seen in a long time, because we don't get to see Iris as a journalist ever. And just kind of, like, talking to the people, because I feel like that's always really been her link, is between, like, Team Flash and the people. And even, like, what Taylor said was interesting. She's like, we should start investigating the people, you know, who are informing Flash about stuff. And she's like,
they cared maybe about we should table CCC that. Media and Iris' storylines. You could have gotten that. Like,
that would be such an interesting storyline.
Yeah, I was, for a second, I forgot that she was going to disappear, because I was like, oh, that's a cool story, her having to block that. No.
I know. Anyway. So that was interesting. I don't know if they'll ever do anything with it, but it is a very interesting concept that they
should do. If it is, do it's Allegra.
Yeah, yeah,
that's Allegra's going to be horrible at it.
Also true. I thought the funeral in general was very well put together. Like, it was very pretty. It's kind of like the nicest funeral they've had on the show, to be honest. Seeing like Caitlin's speech was fine. It was serviceable. Just kind of like seeing the team together in general was nice. Like having their little team meeting at Star Labs. I feel like that hasn't really happened in a long time. And Iris actually being there was very nice because that hasn't happened in a long time either. And her and Barry, even though they only shared like one or two scenes, feeling more like a team here, like, oh, we know you guys are, you know, having a terrible time of it or whatever. So they felt united on that front.
Okay.
It was fine.
I'm going to agree with Tati that I like the structure, you know, like the whole vignette thing. I thought it was like a cool storytelling device. I like it. Picasso, whatever. But the things that I will say, you know, it was a good storytelling device, but the subject matter made it not, you know, failed in other areas. So I'll get to that later. But as like a new thing to do, it's a new thing for a show that's been around for 8 seasons. So, you know, the attempt for creativity and storytelling was made, and I like that. I also liked getting to see so much of Iris and her at CCC Media specifically, because she hasn't been there in forever. And yes, it is to write Frost's obituary, but even within that, we still get to see the return of her podcast and the interactions with her team that is there. It's just like a reminder that they could be doing so much more with that. I like the scene of what I saw with Carla. I just thought that I was not expecting that duo. It felt like she was an adult, like a parent that had been around for a while and that Iris had interacted with, their chemistry in there was really good. And, you know, Carla actually asked her how she was feeling and stuff like that. So those are things that we don't see a lot. So I feel like Iris's vignette was pretty well done, complete. And it was probably the most thought out and put together thing for Frost's funeral of all the other vignettes. Yeah, definitely. I think Mark was grieving appropriately for Mark.
Yes, Mark was most interesting he's ever been. Also,
what else? I feel like there were other things. Oh, I like that Iris played with Barry's hair during the funeral. That was just cute. That's like cute little domestic thing.
That was very sweet.
In a long while, and I do agree with you, May, that it did feel like in the beginning when they were having like their team meeting and Iris and Barry kind of had that aside, it did still feel like we are the Flash, like, you know, husband and wife talking about what to do for their team. And I thought like the concept or the idea was interesting in that you have, you know, regular people when we go to work and we work in a company, if someone in our immediate family dies, then you have a bereavement period. But how do you do that as like a superhero team when there's stuff going on like all the time? And, you know, what does that look like? And how do we get back on our mojo? So I like them talking about that. Okay. because I didn't really like any of the other vignettes and I couldn't really see a lot of them because the stream was like awful. But what did not spark joy for y'all?
My stream also did not spark joy because I was definitely, I did watch, while nothing cut out, so I got to hear everything.
But the picture was just like,
the picture was real slow. So I was hearing it and then I was seeing it and I was trying to put it together. But aside from that, I will say that it's just like, I mean, we already have already, you know, more than hinted at it, but the way that they framed Frost in this is just nothing that we've ever seen in the show. And it's just like, yeah, if we had seen Frost like that, then maybe Frost would be an interesting character. but the Flash doesn't really seem invested in writing interesting characters anymore. They just will tell us about them. So it did feel like it was very hollow because, you know, probably the closest to like reality was the Iris conversation where it's like, yeah, I never got the chance to know her. Or I never wanted to really get to know her. I just thought that because like, yeah, but they didn't even go into why, just like, mm-hmm. because she tried to kill me. And like, maybe I wish that I had seen, you know, how she had reformed and then we could have, you know, gone through that together or like, you know, whatever, moved on from the past. Like if we had actually seen something of like Iris not having let go of that, and now regretting it, that would have been interesting. But instead it's just like, well, I didn't get to know her because the show did not wish us to interact. So now she's dead, and that's unfortunate. So I'm like, all right, well, thanks for that very interesting storyline. And then, of course, just the fact that it takes Frost dying for us to get to see Iris doing her job. And, like, so I'm sure that, like, a lot of people were just like, I wasn't so much but I was that Iris is spending her last episode for 4 episodes focused on Frost's death, and everyone is talking about Frost and caring about Frost, and no one is even being like, we might lose another member of our team.
I was like, you know, is she still sick?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, hello, we did not resolve this.
He was allergic to Star Labs for like ever. She's here.
Yeah, it was so, that was so weird to me. It's just so, and it goes far beyond, like, we've been arguing, like, all season long, does Candace not want to be there? Has Eric lost his marbles? Like, we don't know which it is. But I do think that even if Candace was just like, I don't want to be here, please write me out for this long, you would be able to write a more interesting version of this story where people actually seem invested and care about Iris for the time that she's there. So, like, it doesn't make sense. It's really, really, really weird. I don't know. It just feels like sometimes they're writing and they don't know that this is going to happen, and then they just put in a scene where it's going to happen. So, whatever. All right, so moving on from that, Allegra Chester was fine, but, like, going back to, like, I enjoy their dynamic and I support them, but they're not even developed enough in the writer's eyes to have their own segments. Like, they're just a unit segment. And if we're going to have unit segments, then Barry and Iris could have had a unit segment, and that would have been nice.
They could have taken her to all those little places.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So whatever, you know, if you're going to, like, either do it all or don't do it. Because, right, the way that you're doing it, it looks like either you don't care about Barry and Iris, which everyone already thinks, or you don't know who Chester and Allegra are, which makes sense because they each have, like, 3 personality traits, and then the rest of this is being together. So, whatever. Barry's, like, the whole little checklist, I'm like, how can Barry Allen, how can The Flash have, like, the least interesting vignette in this episode when he is The Flash? Like, what are you doing? It was very weird. Like, I can't believe that Joe and his watercolors was, like, a better, more effective moment for me than what Barry was doing in this episode. Which, by the way, the Joe and watercolors, that was actually excellence. That was excellence. And then when Jesse L. Martin put his whole pussy into that, when he was like, I felt her looking down on me with the watercolors. I finally did what you told me to do. And I was like, he's going through it for these watercolors. So anyway, he was like, I have showed up to work one day this year, and it is this day. So, good job. Good job, Jesse. But anyway, back to Barry. Like, it just went from, like, I'm doing all these things, feels empty. I guess I gotta get Caitlin to come to the funeral. That's the resolution. Which was so whatever. And also, the idea that Caitlin would even not have wanted to go to the funeral in the first place, and have needed to be, like, reminded, like, flashback to 2 episodes ago, when Frost is like, don't push people away. And then Kate's like, I guess I won't, but also I'm going to try to revive you. Like, very, very weird and bad. Like, if I was Caitlin, I would definitely feel very, very guilty because Frost's life literally revolves around me. And she literally was designed and born to protect me. And then she died protecting me. And that sucks balls. So, like, yes, it makes sense for Caitlin to have wanted to resurrect Frost and, like, try to find a way to, like, make her have a consciousness or whatever the hell else, right? But then why not have that storyline be Caitlin seeming very, very fine the whole time, ready to go to the funeral, everything all great, and then reveal, aha, that's why she's fine. But instead it was just like, she went through like three ordeals. She went through like
She should be like, I'm not going to the funeral because there's not going to be a funeral because I'm going to resurrect my sister. That could have been like her vignette. And they'd be like, no, you have to let her go.
Yeah. But instead they were just like, okay, we're just going to do like three things at once, I guess. I don't remember if there were other vignettes. Did Cecile have one? I hope not.
I have no idea. I didn't. If it was, I blessedly did not see it.
Okay. So, yeah. And then finally, you know, I was disappearing and now she's not going to be there for like four episodes and I hate it here. And that's all. I don't like what I'm seeing, especially because I don't know if Candace is going to be in the next season.
Maybe CW is canceling all those shows so they have to pay Candace.
Exactly. There you go. Pay her what you're not paying the rest of the shows. Let her stay. Anyway, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, I was very, very underwhelmed for the most part. Like, we came off of a pretty decent episode from last week, and it just felt like this was too long, too disingenuous. I didn't buy any of these people's emotions. Iris tried her best, even like Candace's scenes, but like I just didn't. Because Frost is not a character that I feel like really had deep connections to any of the mains other than Kaylin and even like maybe Mark. I bought his emotions because, like, you know, that's the person she talked about the most and was with most. I didn't feel like any of them had that connection to even like have these moments of grief. And I feel like I would have bought it a lot more, like you said, Tati, you know, had they shown us, you know, Frost doing all of these really fun things. She sounded like she really had a fun life outside of Team Flash, so I don't know why we didn't see any of it. But I feel like that's not enough. Like, you can't make up a character and give her, you know, character traits after she's gone. That doesn't make any sense. And so you can't expect us to, like, really feel for these people who also didn't seem like they were very close to her. And that really showed. It just felt like everyone was sort of sleepwalking through this episode, like, very subdued. Even, like, Carla and Iris, as much as I appreciated Carla asking Iris how she was, the fact that she spoke to Iris instead of her own daughter and that Barry spoke to Caitlin instead of asking Iris how she was doing, given the fact that just two episodes ago, she was afraid of touching people because they were just disappearing around her, makes no sense to me. It was a very clear writing choice, and I don't like it. And even, I don't know, it's just, like, so terrible in the sense that, like, this is apparently a team member who was on the show for several seasons, and yet her whole funeral episode, I felt nothing. I just wanted them to, like, sprinkle in a bit more storyline for the time sickness, and even, like, when Blockbuster showed up on the scene, I was like, Blockbuster, like, Bloodhaven Blockbuster? That Blockbuster? No, that can't possibly be. I don't know if they just used that name, because I was not feeling that at all.
Was that what the guy's name was?
Yeah, it was. And it was just, I don't know.
I was just glad he showed up to end the like, you know, the sad musical montage that was happening at the start. That before I realized that things were not actually lining up because I was like, it's so slow. What's going on?
Yes. Slow. And even like Allegra and Cecile being out in the field, they don't have costumes. They don't have anything. It's just so bizarre to me. It's like, why are you here? And what is it that you're doing? And even like when Cecile was like, I'm going to donate whatever percent of my time to helping Metas for free. I was like, but weren't you?
You didn't even do that for free.
So I don't know. It just felt so random and bizarre. Like Barry at a hot dog eating contest. I was like, what is this show? What am I watching on my screen right now? Yes, it was. But it just felt so strange. It was like I was having an out of body experience watching the show because it didn't feel like natural what was happening on screen. It didn't feel like a, you know, an authentic progression of where we were previously or even like, and again, it's the pacing. It's just these like breaks from the main storyline. You have Iris disappearing at the end where there was no build up to that in the entire episode. So it's like her time sickness decided to like give her a break because Frost died? That makes no sense. Just like, you know, Flash's life doesn't end because, you know, metas are going to meta around the city. That should be the case for Iris' story too. So it just, it was so half-assed and half-hearted. And even by the end, when Caitlin's like, I'm going to bring Frost back, I was like, oh my God, please let it be over. Like, you need to, like, move on. You need to go back to that guy you dumped for your husband or whatever and just, like, move the hell on. And I feel like it wasn't a good way to honor Frost at all, because that's probably not even what she wanted. And I think what irritated me the most about Caitlin this episode is that, and this is something she does constantly on the show for years, is that when she's is pissed about something, she always takes it out on everybody. And she gets to do that. And, like, no one says anything to her. Everyone's, like, so understanding or whatever. But, like, she has this, I'm nice, but really I'm kind of not underneath that. And it pops up every once in a while to show you, like, I feel like her true colors. And it's always ugly to me. And I don't like it.
This is why I feel like she should have died. Because, not just because, like, I don't really like her of the two of them, but also because I feel like there would have been more emotion with the characters in set. And also, you know, like, the Flash Twitter is like, you know, we lost a loved one. I'm like, who is we? Because Killer Frost has only been here as Killer Frost for maybe 4 seasons out of the 8. And most of those, like, half of that, she was a villain. So a lot of her traits and her personality is half-baked, or they just kind of decided. Like, if she is, like, a part of Caitlin's consciousness made real or whatever, where in there why does she suddenly like hip-hop music versus Caitlin, who, you know, it's like a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll. It's not like that in hip-hop. Like, those don't really go, like, it really doesn't feel like there was any thought behind why Frost has the personality that she has. They didn't really go into any kind of, because it just made her carbon copy. Because even when Frost was, I think when they were still sharing a body, Frost knew all of Caitlin's medical knowledge. So it's like, why have two of you if you both know the same things? And a lot of the stuff that they did with her is like show or tell and not show. And so it doesn't really, I don't really feel any emotional connection. It's clear that she didn't get along with any of the other members of Team Flash on a deep personal level. Because at first when they're, you know, Iris is like, I didn't really know her. It's like, why do my baby like that? But none of them did. Like, all of them were like, I don't really know. I didn't get enough time to spend with Frost. And I feel like they could have, in all of the episodes, their Frost-dedicated episodes where they just have her around just for like the fight scene or whatever, they could have built stories around her personality or things that she likes to do, and it would have felt more authentic. Because like a lot of the stuff that they say that she likes to do, I'm like, I just don't believe you. I don't, you know, we see it every now and then, but I don't really feel that strong of an attachment to her character that deserved the kind of storytelling they were trying to do for this episode. And I feel like with Caitlin, whether you liked her or not on this side of it, there's enough general fandom appreciation for Caitlin. She's been around for 8 seasons. We've known her the longest. We have an intricate idea of her personality. And I generally feel like it would be sadder for people on the show, the team members, if she was gone. And especially it would give Frost somewhere new to go if the person that she had spent her entire existence living for is now gone. What do I do? How do I move on? She could have launched that
into, how do I live without you?
How do I live without you? I want to know. But instead we get this redux of Caitlin being like, I'm fine, but then I'm not fine, but then I am fine, but then no, I'm going to go behind everybody's back and do this thing again. So it's like when she figured out that her powers were starting to emerge as Frost anyway, and she went behind everybody's back and she stole the Sorcerer's Stone or whatever the fuck and got Wally like sucked into another dimension being selfish. Like, she has these like little selfish things that she does. And I agree with you, Mae, that whenever she is having issues, she takes it out on everybody, especially Barry. And people don't really feel like they need to call her out on that, but it's like a consistent character flaw of hers that she does. And it's annoying that that scene was so long, first of all. And I definitely agree with you, May, that it is weird that Carla had a such significant scene with Iris, but not her daughter. And the same with Barry having one with Caitlin, but not his wife. So I thought that was weird. I think the Chester and Allegra fight over hummus was stupid. Why did we spend so much time on this, you know, vignette? I agree, Barry was a waste of time. I did enjoy Blockbuster, I guess, calling Chester and Allegra, like calling Allegra and Cecile pathetic. I thought that was funny. But yeah, overall, I feel like my main gripe is that just my feelings, personal feelings aside, I still feel like it would have worked better with a Caitlin death instead of a Frost death, because I just feel like there'd be like a lot more emotional impact there than what we have, or what we like received. And then also I agree with you, like, you know, the fact that so much time was spent on this, and then in the final milliseconds of the episode is when Iris disappears, and there's no mention of her sickness throughout the episode. Is she okay to be up and working and being around people? The fact that when she did disappear, Taylor didn't even see it happen. So no one knows. She's just not there anymore. So there's no one to go and tell Barry, like, hey, something weird happened, you know? So all of that, I feel like it's a cheap way out at the end of the episode. And now we won't see Iris again for 4 episodes. It's just really, it sucks a lot. Yeah. What did people have to say? Because I feel like people had a lot to say.
Yes. Starting with Sonia, she says, hey, ladies, I really didn't like this episode of The Flash, as it felt like a filler episode that is totally a filler episode. I'm sure if I cared more about Frost, it would have been nice to see the team grieving over her loss and whatnot. But in the end, having an entire episode be about her death was such a waste. And in a shortened season, I'm not sure why Eric chose to make that decision. This is like that episode in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s final season, where it was a filler episode with only 2 main characters in it. So, like, yeah, no. Anyway, some of the scenes were nice, like seeing Iris writing and doing her podcast and being a boss at CCC, but some were just dumb, like Allegra and Chester arguing over sandwiches, hummus, and condiments, and Joe being all like, I'm taking watercolor classes because of Frost, but he does not care about his daughter, does he?
Right. And how did a grown man that was like raising 2 kids not know not to mix bleach and colors? Like, I didn't still...
Right?
How did that work out, Joe?
Also, the fact that Barry can run all around the world and run to the top of Everest and whatnot for Frost bucket list, but somehow wasn't able to run to Coast City to check on his own fucking wife. Why? With Allegra and Cecile fighting alongside Barry, shouldn't they get costumes or masks? Like, why has no one clocked them yet? Also, speaking of Cecile, she is literally so bad at using her powers, it's not even funny anymore. I love how everyone, including me, were like, yay, Caitlin is moving on with her life. And then at the end with the lab in her apartment, her wanting to make Frost again or whatever, she's all, bitch, you thought. Taylor being the viewers after Iris is like, I heard that Allegra was a good boss, and saying, LOL, from who? Because that is exactly what I was thinking, since we literally never saw her at CCC or doing her job. Yet another Iris time sickness cliffhanger ending, and then she'll be gone for 4 episodes and come back with probably no explanation of the time sickness storyline, despite it being the most interesting storyline so far this season. I don't know how I feel about the next 4 episodes having no Iris. Guess I'll just power through. And Anita says, good morning, ladies, or evening, depending on when you're recording. I'll be interested to hear what about this episode sparked joy for you, because 5 minutes into streaming it on Thursday, I was saying out loud, no, Barry, you could have easily stopped Desmond. So this was another episode lately of Where's Barry? And it's gone so bad, I have to wonder if I agree with the fanboys who always thought he wasn't emphasized enough, or laughing at them because they can't handle what they asked for. You would think that with all of Barry's experience with the Speed Force, the time rates, lectures from Jay, and tracking Tacky on this and that, he would have learned how to start piecing together the answers to Iris's time sickness while dispatching the baddie of the week. Why can't this writing team multitask? I knew there would be nothing rewarding from Killer Frost's death. This should have been a B plot with Caitlin, not the whole team, finding ways to honor Frost, and she should have done that along with her mother. Desmond was a pretty important order of business, if you ask me. He's a mound of destruction that could pop up at any moment. Barry is on Mount Everest building a snowman for Bargain Basement Elsa and wolfing down hot dogs. Well, Desmond was giving me cosplay Bane, only super cute, so honestly, I wasn't mad to see him. I liked his snark, and he could have been a potentially joyful villain, but no. I didn't need to see Allegra, Chester, and Cecile fail so badly in the field and on comms. When did Cisco ever daydream so much he didn't have answers for Barry? I wanted to see Barry reinforce the girders of that building with speed heat without roasting everyone inside. Wait, Cecile's now a team member in the field? Boy, they let anybody suit up after Iris stopped running the place. priority one, hello, we still haven't come up with the source of Iris's time sickness, and like it or not, she's infinitely more important than Killer Frost. I don't care what the misguided fanboys say. Frost's legacy is not having the goods to back up her tough talk, and she's nothing but one bad reinvention after another. Now Caitlin is so wrecked with grief that she HGTV'd her apartment into a work-from-home lab and will attempt to reanimate the twin sister that was really just her fleshed-out, spun-off subconscious. Aside from the asinine idea of it all, it spells trouble. Caitlin's instincts are way off, and she has a terrible track record when she decides to act on her own. Should somebody who helped unlock Savitar and Deathstorm walk out of a highly experimental facility with a bunch of cold fusion of all things and some genome gadgets? When Killer Frost resurrects, goes psycho and winds up responsible for someone dying, but not killing them directly, it'll just be another mess of Caitlin for the team to clean up. Cecile second-guessing Iris' decision to assign the obit to Arish was not joyful because it's not her company. Where are Cecile's manners anyway? Iris invites her to lunch and she oversteps. And I don't see the problem with Iris' decision. Obits are not eulogies. They are often written by lower-level reporters and at huge newspapers. They are often written ahead of time for prominent people and updated until they pass away. Always ready to go. This is true. So Cecile was just giving bad advice when she should have been working on a defense for Hot Bane. I'm not asking this for this to be the Barry and Iris show, but they have diminished Barry and Iris. Until now, Iris will be missing for 4 episodes. The whole thing is wildly out of control and not a good look on Eric Wallace. Writers on other shows understand how to put a power couple at the center of a story that unfolds cleanly. They are each well-developed. They are surrounded by useful friends with lives of their own, and we get to check in on those lives without forgetting who the central characters are. I know this is a comic book show, and you have to make shit up, but this writing room is now pumping out remedial content. And Suarez feedback. Sigh, The Flash. Only Candace could make the forced writing of pretending to care about Frost work. And of course, they make her disappear right at the very end. The disrespect to Iris is atrocious. They made Iris once again a damsel in need of saving, except she won't even be on the show for 4 episodes. A mess. I was zoned out of most of the rest of the episode. I just don't care. Sigh. Hopefully the finale where she's back is an improvement over whatever the next few episodes will be. And that is that on feedback.
That sure is that.
Do you want to talk about predictions? Because I don't really even feel like, you know, I don't even know how Dion got. I saw him in the trailer. I'm like, how did you even get here?
Right.
But yeah, this is very, it's sad that you don't want to predict anything because you're just like,
My only prediction.
None of it will happen.
Right. My only prediction is that over the course, at some point throughout the 4 episodes, right, it'll be we know that Nora and Bart are probably disappearing or whatever. It seems like he might lose them because he's going to lose Iris. So at some point they're going to be restored and then he's going to be like, okay, well then Iris must be safe because they are safe. So I'll come back to that in episode 19.
Okay.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Thank you for your service. Lady with Gumption of the Week. I feel like it seems pretty obvious to
Naomi.
Me. That's Naomi.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, unanimous.
I thought we were going to at least give a nomination for someone in Flash, but yes, yeah. Naomi is the winner. obviously, Caitlin sure has the gumption to...
shit, she is in the bad place. So, considering that the next 4 weeks are going to be very, very difficult without Iris... we have decided that we are going to go on a mini hiatus and we're just going to clump the next 2 weeks together. It's our only show since Naomi is no longer on
with
the
us.
Yes, The Flash is our only show, so we're going to skip next week, so do not come back unless you want to come to Patreon, where we'll be talking about everything all at once, everything everywhere. So you can come to Patreon for that. Then we'll be back the week after, and we'll do the two Flash episodes, and then we'll skip a week, and we'll do the next two Flash episodes, and then we'll get back to regularly probing program scheduling when Iris comes back. So we will suffer together, y'all. considering how probably many of you won't watch anyway, we will watch the shit that you don't want to watch. So we will tell you what happened, how Barry is suffering without his wife.
You better be.
So yeah, come back for that. And that's that on that. We'll see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.